Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Lizzie Christel began her amazing career in Berlin after graduating in fashion from the Munich Masterclass. She has worked closely with extraordinary directors such as Egbert Berger, Roland Emmerich, Terence Malick, Michael Haneke, and Florian Gallenberger. In 2003, Lizzie was nominated for a Lola for her costume design on Shadows of Time, and went on to win a Lola in 2009 for her beautiful work on the historical film City of War, John Rabe, both of which were directed by Florian Gallenberger. Anonymous, directed by Roland Emmerich in 2011, gained Lizzie both an Oscar nomination and another Lola win. The film has been widely acclaimed and was featured in an exhibition at the Fashion Institute of Design in Los Angeles. A Hidden Life, directed by Terence Malick, and of which Lizzie is particularly proud of, received 32 nominations and had 10 wins. All Quiet on the Western Front, directed by Edward Berger, is Lizzie's most recent feature film and can currently be seen on Netflix. We talked to Lizzie via Zoom call for this interview. Hi, Lizzie. It's a pleasure to talk to you today. You've obviously done many great films, but today's focus is on so-called uniform films. While those may present specific issues for your work as a costume designer, I would also like to talk about your overall creative process for projects. How long usually, well, if there is a usually, before production starts, do you start preparing for projects?
On All Quiet, I met Edward July 2020. Mm-hmm. Via Zoom. 1 week later, it was more or less clear that we're gonna do this together. And right on this day, I started with research. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it depends, of course, from film to film. But I would say the research for All Quiet never ended, really. But to have a basic idea, what is it about the whole frame of uniforms and obviously the history around the First World War, at least I would say 3 months. Mm-hmm. And after this 3 months, we started what we call soft pre-production, and we started with the shoot February, March. See, I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I think Edward mentioned March, I think.
It was early March 2021. You know, obviously, we worked with a military advisor because this is a subject you can't learn on your own. There is too much of things you could do wrong. In every uniform world, you have to know what is right. And if you go for different decisions, what we did sometimes, then you have at least to know what would be right. And this is how I work with Edward. I try always to tell him what is right and what I think would be better for the story, better for the movie, better for the screen. Mm-hmm.
In interviews, you've mentioned that you show directors collages or drawings. How specific do you get detail-wise in those? Is it more like for a general mood or go already in details in regards to costumes and clothing? Or is it more about for you to get a feel of what you're dealing with in those movies?
We talk about different steps. First, when I read a script, then I try to find material what talks to me. Mm-hmm. To catch, let's say, a general mood. In this case, I've tried to find these general mood pictures And on the other hand, there's this fantastic documentary from Peter Jackson, They Shall Not Grow Old. And I watched this right at the beginning of my research.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a first step just to see how far we will go, actually. And I understood very quickly that Edward agreed immediately on it has to be as painful as possible.
Mm-hmm. Have you read the book? Because obviously it's a literary adaptation. Or did you focus on the script for this solely?
I read the novel a long time ago, and I read it one more time just when we started with the pre-production. But then I focused on the script, back to these collages, and you know, it goes step by step. You go deeper and deeper. You learn first about this uniform world. And then I tried to create a family for each of these young men. Not that we even met them in the movie, but I had to know how the family from each of these characters coming from very different backgrounds. How would they look like? How would they dress their son going to school? What does it mean to wear a shirt with collar? What does it mean to wear a shirt without collar? Because, you know, we have to imagine in these days, clothes were something very precious. People had a Sunday suit and a suit for a suit or just a basic workwear for their daily life. And I can't even remember if I showed Edward this part of the work. It's just important for me to feel them, show what is already a next step. What could you do? Which little detail you could give each of these young men? Because, you know, uniform is made for uniform, hide the person, hide the individual. And you have very small little cracks where you can show a bit more of them. And I learn a lot just listening to stories, you know, asking elderly people. And one thing what I used quite often was families were allowed to send them parcels, obviously, but and they were allowed to knit for them. It was very helpful for this young man, a knitted sweater, a knitted hat.
Yeah.
Just doing things out of the blue and out of a fantasy is wrong, on my point of view, for such a strong story.
Yeah, but it has to be rooted in reality. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So you took already one of my questions that I was going to ask about the uniforms, but yeah, that was something I wondered about, how you give these characters some form of individuality in this sea of uniforms, which obviously are there to suppress individuality in a way.
Mm-hmm.
How big was your team on All Quiet on the Western Front? I'm sure it varies from project to project, but for this one specifically,
we grew from month to month.
Yeah.
We started in Berlin with 4 people in Berlin. And in November, December, a second crew in Prague started already. And because of COVID, I couldn't just move forwards and backwards. And they were 6 or 7 people in Prague.
Mm-hmm.
And from January on, we were, I would say, around 15 people, February around 20. And with the beginning of the shoot, we were still basically 20 people. But on all these big days, of course, we had extra hands.
Yeah.
Daily is how it's called in our language.
And because you mentioned, you know, all the preparation, how many costumes roughly overall did you and your team design and prepare, because obviously there's some very big battle scenes. I would imagine that's quite a number that you had to, you know, make sure everybody is close.
Let's say it was around 850 uniforms plus cars, plus civilian clothes. Civilian means, you know, the washer ladies in the beginning, the schoolboys in the school, passerbys on the street. 1,100, oh roughly. God.
That is quite a number. Usually the nature of most uniform films is that they're also historic films. And I know, for example, that Die Landshuter Hochzeit, the Landshut Wedding, which is a historical pageant play, they're very meticulous regarding the sourcing of, you know, the fabrics for their costumes, as, you know, the people portrayed are historic real-life people. When designing and creating these uniforms, how much of a concern is fabric actually, or is it more about the pattern, the color, and the way the clothes sit on the body and move with the body?
It is a big concern, because in this case, uniform fabric has a certain weight, mm-hmm. and this weight you can't find in any regular shop. But there are still a lot of weavers producing uniform fabric. Mm-hmm. And so we had fabric from Bavaria, where is still a weaving factory. And we had a lot of fabric from factories in Poland. I would say the biggest amount came from Poland, because the biggest amount of uniforms is made in Poland. Whereas I would say worldwide, meanwhile, the most important uniform factory, and I think we all work with hero costumes. You can ask people from the States. He's specialized on this subject. Mm-hmm. He knows a lot about period uniforms, but also he produces uniforms for the French army, the Polish army.
Okay.
So it is a very specific way how to stitch uniforms, and it is very specific to stitch period costumes, period uniforms.
Yes. And talking about color and patterns, obviously for All Quiet on the Western Front, there are a lot of dark colors. The costumes are not that elaborate, or rather opulent. For example, for John Rabe and the Turncoat, which you also did the costumes for, they do feature some civilian scenes and protagonists. So I was wondering, does it make it more complicated for you if you have, you know, this mixture? Or would you say it actually, you know, my job is my job, it doesn't really make any difference for me?
I think I would have said before, why are there not more civilian scenes in it? After this experience / adventure, I would say it was an amazing school, really an amazing school in uniform making, in history, and over again with every character to find the little crack. I wouldn't say it's easy to design a whole new world. Of course, it's not easy. Nothing is easy. But there was, the idea was already there. Mm-hmm. So there were two things to find. The crack, who is the personality? And we pretend Paul Bäumer is wearing one uniform from the beginning to the end. And this was a whole experience in itself. And this gave me many sleepless nights. And then I started a Leporello. And in this Leporello, you know, that was written, it was a long Leporello, every single scene, what is happening? He leaves Germany, everything is clean. The first rain, the first night in the trenches, really everything that you could see, how much uniforms you need at the end of the day to fulfill all this, to fulfill the story of one uniform. And this was incredibly interesting. Yeah. And we had a lot of discussions about this, forwards and backwards. And then you are on set, and of course, obviously, things happen you did not imagine. And then, all is wrong. But of course, it's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's just what happens. So I had a great, great, great respect doing this movie. And I was not disappointed on my way.
That's great to hear.
You know what I mean? It's every story has his own secrets, his own path. And even with the experience I have, I couldn't say I know it all, because you never know.
Because you just mentioned the journey of Paul's uniform, so to speak, because I wondered, all of these battle scenes, which many, of course, play in the mud, which means dirt on costumes, on the uniforms. And just a very practical question, how do you and your department deal with all of these costumes going through all that wear and tear? What was interesting specifically in this film, because that is mirrored in the very beginning in that scene, you know, with the women mending the uniforms coming back from the front and washing them and the uniforms being redistributed. So I was wondering, did you and your department have a sort of line similar to that, dealing with the cleaning of the uniforms or the putting them back in shape?
We had quite a big aging and dyeing department running by a textile artist, and I work with her since a very long time, a very, very, very long time. And you must imagine, all these uniforms were brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new. And this was a very heavy, long treatment. The other way around, how you see it in the movie, because we received them clean and we had to bring them to the other end of the street.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an amazing work. And still in Berlin, I asked Marie, who is responsible for all this, most of all, how to achieve it, that it looks natural. And so still in Berlin, we went just outside, grabbed a bucket of mud, and she developed a way to fix it in the fabric,
mm-hmm,
with potatoes and rice. She found a way to mix the dirt with starch. And she made one test in Berlin, and this looked fabulous. And as soon as we were in Prague, we had quite a lot of original soil from the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about containers full of soil. And then they did the same, what she tested in Berlin, on a big scale. And of course, for the cast, it was a very, very delicate work. Sounds strange, but it was really, really delicate. And for the masses, means for the extras and for the stunts, each and every uniform had a strong basic treatment. And then every single morning, girls and guys from the aging department came along with their big buckets of mud and treated the uniforms over and over again in the morning and all day long.
I've read in an article about your work on Anonymous, for which you were nominated for an Oscar, that you have a secret weapon against smell for your costumes, meaning you put vodka in a spray bottle and then spray the costumes. So am I right in assuming that this was used for All Quiet on the Western Front as well, considering?
But, you know, this is an old recipe, not founded by me. This comes from costumer to costumer. The funny part might be the huge amount of vodka we buy, and the accounting department is asking me again and again and again, why do you need this big amount of vodka on every big movie? Yes.
Now, some sort of general questions, because you mentioned when we talked before the interview that, you know, you're currently in production and your days are obviously very long. How does your day during preparation look, and how does it look during a shoot?
You know, prep is, of course, the most important time for us. So I could say usually I get up around 6 and I'm back home around 9:30. Okay. And on All Quiet, it was exactly like this. And during shoot, what was really exceptional, I think we started working almost every day around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say latest 3 or 4. So get up at 2, go to bed around 9, because you just count the hours. How long can I sleep?
I mean, those are monumental days. What would you say is maybe the biggest misconception about your work as a costume designer?
I think the biggest misconception is that people, ordinary people, but even in the business, think if you are interested in fashion and you have a good taste, then you are a costume designer. And this makes me still angry.
I can understand.
There is this horrible German word, Klamotten, and it doesn't exist in any other language. And I find it disrespectful. And a costume is a costume and a dress is a dress. And, you know, it's not only in period costume. Of course, I love making period movies. I'm made for this. But of course, I do also contemporary movies, and it's building a character.
Yeah.
It's not shopping. It is building a character. It is the research about over and over again, where does this person come from? How is he born and raised? It is an entire building of a character. Character building and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't treat a character badly because I doesn't like what he does.
Yeah,
it's a bit an equal treatment whether I like this person or not.
Yeah,
and also, I remember very well, I did a movie with Michael Haneke in Paris, Caché.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady producer, fantastic woman, she asked me, but how do you know how the French dress code works?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I was not Chinese and I did a film in China. So this is, again and again, a lot of research, listening, asking, keep your eye open on the streets. And there was, in Caché, was this line in the script, and then he takes his house shoes. It is true, in France, the house shoe doesn't exist. It's something very strange.
Very German.
You know, and I told her, of course I know a house shoe, what you know from Austria or from Germany. No, people don't wear it in France. These things, and this is what I love, to go into new worlds. And this is the adventure, yeah, to open doors, to figure out how it works.
Yeah. Has the work changed over the course of the years? I'm asking, I guess, specifically maybe if technology has made it easier or maybe made it more complicated.
I think what has really changed is the time, the prep time, gets shorter and shorter. There was never enough money for none of the movies I did so far, so I think this is too easy. But the preparation time got really shorter and shorter. And this is for I wouldn't say it becomes impossible because we always make it happen. But as soon as you start with stitching costumes and, you know, making them from scratch, weaving fabrics and not weaving fabrics because you can't find them because of the mass of fabric you need, like it was in All Quiet. You can't go in a shop and buy this amount of fabric.
A project like this, where obviously the costumes are under a lot of wear and tear, you know, even if there were a certain amount of uniforms one could rent, this would not be possible for a project like this.
You know, we rented very, very few uniforms, maybe 10%. For offices, it was not that complicated, but, you know, you can't ruin a rental costume.
Yes, exactly. So
you always go back to the making. Yes, I would say this, the precious preparation time becomes more and more a problem.
Would you nevertheless say that maybe the appreciation has changed for the work of costume design?
Lucky me. Lucky me. And I know I'm extremely lucky. I would say almost all the way through, I worked with directors who have a great appreciation for costume. Mm-hmm. Lucky me. But I know, yes, it has changed. And especially if you do contemporary movies, because, yes, it's just buying stuff, and it is never just buying. Yeah. Believe me, it's never like that.
Exactly. I'm not sure if you followed Normal People. It was a BBC series, and it was a contemporary series that plays in Ireland, I think in the early 2010s. And I remember specifically that the male lead character wears necklace, very plain and simple. I don't know if it was gold or silver, but it's featured in several scenes. And there was a Twitter thread for the necklace because people were so enamored by it and felt that it really brought his character an extra edge. And I thought that was so interesting because it's just a small detail, but it makes a character, and people noticing that, I felt really happy because I thought, oh, you know, they appreciate all the thought that was put into the character, into his costume. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully that will continue. Obviously, our listeners can't see it because we will just have the audio, but I can see what is hanging behind you. Which are pictures and fabric samples. So I was wondering, can you share which project you are working on?
Yes, lucky me, I have the opportunity to work again with Edward Berger.
Mm.
And we are in Rome in the wonderful Cinecittà, and we are working on a film called Conclave.
And last but not least, All Quiet on the Western Front is the German Oscar candidate for 2022. And I just want to say what a great achievement for the team, also for your team. Congratulations and all the best for the awards season.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for taking the time today out of your busy schedule. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.